Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Community Conversations podcast. My name is Brian Hess, and I am joined by the one and only Noah Champ.
It's great to be a guest on your podcast, Brian.
It's great to have you, man.
I always get so much from this, so much life.
It's just me and you this time.
Just you and me. Back to the old days.
That's it. Yeah.
Our roots.
Yeah, we started just like this.
Yeah, in this room.
Yep.
And now there's millions of people that listen to this.
So for those of you who don't know, we are right now in week 3 of our scripture emphasis at Be Love Co. And we've been taking the church week by week and chapter by chapter through the book of Ephesians. And it's been great, super fun. And really, this is kind of a new approach for us as a church to, as far as like teaching, even like, you know, our Sunday messages historically have been more topical. But it's been really great going through just a book of the Bible, and so much so that we've actually had a lot of people asking to find other outlets for just this kind of teaching.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not all from us.
Yeah.
You know what Einstein says? Is that a genius is someone who's good at hiding their resources.
There you go.
So.
There you go.
So we're not telling you anything.
But yeah, no, we've had a lot of good response from our church, just going through a book of the Bible, mm-hmm. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. I'm normally pretty thematic when I preach. And so, right. You know, this is almost pure exegetical work, which has been kind of fun and different. Yeah. Not something I'm used to.
It turns out people like it.
Yeah. People actually enjoy the Bible. It still holds up a bit.
It still holds up.
It's not as good as Pride and Prejudice, but it's pretty good.
So on this episode, we thought it would be nice to take people through just a bit of the history of how we have the Bible that we have. Now, I'm going to say this on the front end, full disclosure. There's a lot more to the history of the Bible than we're able to just package in this one episode.
Mm-hmm.
So for those of you who listen and you like what you hear and you want to learn more, we're going to post a couple links to a guy named Tim Mackey from the Bible Project, teaching on the history of the Old Testament, of the New Testament, and of just the Bible as a whole. And he walks through in much greater detail how we have the Bible that we have today.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so let's get into it.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. I don't know if a lot of people know how we got to where we got as far as the scripture that we have, the way we have it. You know what I mean? I don't know if a lot of people actually get that.
Yeah.
It wasn't picked, you know, like super early, and you know, for like, you know, at least 200 or so, if not 300 or so years, there was a lot of, you know, like this church in Ephesus could have like a Roman scroll,
mm-hmm.
or you know, this person over here could have like a, you know, a scroll to the church in Ephesus. It's like it wasn't very all available for a long, long, long time.
Yeah.
And you know, even more than that, it wasn't canonized for a long time, which was right. Very hard for the early church fathers because there, you know, there very much was a lot of, well, what do we believe and what don't we?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the things I've noticed just in studying this, that by the time we do get to, in history, we do get to some of the councils that we're going to talk about, that a lot of what we have now is like canonized scripture had like an organic collecting.
Yeah.
Just over time.
Yeah.
We had
the Hebrew Bible, you know, which right. was its own thing. But
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, we had that. But even with like the, you know, with like what we have in the New Testament, because, you know, there was no printing press for after, for what, 1,200 years?
Gutenberg after, still just wasn't yeah. doing anything.
Right. So the original manuscripts of say like Paul's letter to Ephesus,
mm-hmm.
like for that to get passed around, you just had to have scribes
that would
take his and they would write their own down and then they would send it to other churches. Yeah, and it was a very slow process.
Pray there wasn't, you know, there's still a ton of manuscripts with mistakes.
Yep.
You know, and so you're also dealing with mistakes and issues and changes. And we have a lot of, obviously now, I say we as if I'm an archaeologist, we have a lot of great traditional, you know, manuscripts now that, you know, and then even the Dead Sea Scrolls weren't amazing. Fine when it comes to that. But yeah, it was a lot of just handwriting and, mm-hmm. and boom, 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 really, you know, and which is weird to think like, you know, somebody would just sit for a couple of days and just finish a book of Romans and or finish a book of this and, you know, get it out and move it on. And
yep.
I can't imagine how lost I might have been as an early believer on what to, like, honestly, thank God for the church as a body and a people that probably held so much together by saying, oh, no, we don't do this, we don't do that, you know what I mean, because of what they had. Yeah. Without that, I think if you were more of a solo Christian, you know, in the early 300 to 600, 900s, especially, like, it could have been very challenging to know what to believe, what not to believe.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Very challenging.
I think one of the things we should highlight, and this wasn't something that I really like thought deeply about until like more recently in the last like several years, but just how much the Bible is simultaneously like fully divine, but also fully human.
Yeah.
Because I know you talk about this a lot. A lot of times we have this idea in our head that for the Bible to have been like divinely inspired,
means it has
that like
no humanity in it.
Somebody went into a trance and they came back.
Yeah.
They regained consciousness and there was the book of Romans in front of Paul. He was like, oh, I don't, you know.
Right. Yeah.
But well, that's not how it works.
Yeah. It's like, he fell out and he passed out. Well, like, here's a really great, I love this example. I've used this a couple times when thinking about this. This will blow your mind. So this is Jeremiah 36, 1 through 4. It says, in the fourth year of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, the word came to Jeremiah from the Lord. Take a scroll, write on it the words that I have spoken to you against Israel and Judah and all the nations. From the day I spoke to you, from the days of Josiah until today, it may be that the hours of Judah will hear all the disasters that I listen to do. They will hear all the disasters that I intend to do to them, so that everyone may turn from his evil way and that I may forgive the iniquity and their sin. Then Jeremiah called Baruch, the son of Neriim, and Baruch wrote on a scroll all the dictation, Jeremiah, all the words that the Lord had spoken to him. So there's like just a small example of that. Now, what's very interesting is in Jeremiah, not only is Jeremiah not the one writing it, he has a scribe. He sends it to Jehoiakim, the king.
Mm-hmm.
He hates it.
Yeah.
Rips it up, eats some of it, and burns the rest.
Yeah.
So the end of Jeremiah 36 says, then Jeremiah took another scroll and gave it to Baruch and the scribe, the son of Neriim. He wrote on it at the dictation of Jeremiah, all the words of the scroll that Jehoiakim, king of Judah, had burned in the fire, and many similar words were added to them.
Right. So there were two books of Jeremiah written.
Two books of Jeremiah written by Jeremiah back to back. And if you know, the King Jehoiakim wouldn't have been pissed off that day, what might we have had added? What might we would be missing?
Right.
In the second version of the scroll of Jeremiah.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a very human element. You know, you see it in Joshua with them saying they killed everyone. Then you see women and children and livestock that were actually kept alive. And all four gospels have different things Jesus said on the cross, different things that happen. You know, some of them place certain stories at different point and maybe in the chronology of Jesus's life. And so, and I don't think this should be discouraging.
Right.
I actually think that seeing the humanity in the gospel should be encouraging because, one, God still works through us, and he wants to partner with humanity. And two, I actually think they speak to its legitimacy.
Yeah.
I think cookie cutter perfect examples everywhere actually makes you go, what?
Right.
Like some of these gospels are 40 or 50 years apart.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, and you know, the Bible was written over a span of, I think, 1,500 years, by 40 different authors on three different continents.
Yeah.
And, you know, Tim Mackey has this great line that he talks about how, like, a lot of people who are really skeptical of the Bible have this vision that there are just these group of, like, white-haired men who got together and decided to scheme and, you know, put together this really, like, deceptive book. And, like, oh, we're going to... And it's like, the way the Bible came about, you can't make that up.
No. No.
You can't.
And it's still the number one selling book in the world.
It's doing great.
It's doing so well. It's gone gangbusters from here. You can't make it up. You can't cross-pollinate cultures the way the Hebrew Bible and, you know, the New Testament of Jesus. Like, you can't create cross-pollination like that mm-hmm. anymore. You know what I mean? Like, you just can't do it. Half a book's not written, you know, specifically for Indians, and the second half written for Irish people.
Yeah.
And that's what that's kind of what the scriptures feel like a bit. You know what I mean? There's such a cross-pollination of cultures there that you don't find anywhere else. It's just, it's insane.
Yeah.
And I don't think people understand, you know what I mean? And the great line that John Walton always used was that the Bible's written for us, but not to us. Mm-hmm. And that's the main important thing to remember when you're thinking about the makeup of the Bible, is it's a book that's written for us, but it was never written to us. So its cultural narratives are shifting, and they're human, and they do with the cultural matters of the times and how things were. And you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You couldn't write about Tom Sawyer not painting a picket fence in the in 10 AD, there was no picket fences.
Yeah.
There was none. Mm-hmm. So there's cultural references that matter. There's always things, but it's, you know, it's a book that's incredibly complex and has lasted through tons of history, and its canonization is the same. It's just insane.
Yeah. Yeah. So we talked about how, like, early on, it was a very slow process, just in terms of, like, the duplicating of the letters, for example, that Paul wrote.
Yeah.
It spread, you know, throughout the whole region, you know, Asia and Africa and all that. But eventually we get to a point in history where we have a few, like, councils of people that got together.
Yeah.
That some had, you know, affirmed canon of scripture, and there were
We talk about, when we use the word canonized scripture, what we mean are the books that the church would say are guaranteed divinely inspired.
Yeah.
So we've got, here's a great example, is you have letters from the apostolic or patristic fathers, right? Polycarp and Athanasius and all these things. They have their own letters to churches.
Sure.
But the church decided and voted very early that those would not be considered divinely inspired.
Yeah.
Pieces of literature. Mm-hmm. So when we say, like, canonized Bible, what we mean is the church has said, the church has basically said, since the Council of Rome in AD 382, which was the first canonization of scripture, these are the books that we are calling scripture.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's a line from, it's a little wordy, but this is, so the Council of Rome in AD 382 was the first canonization of scripture, and this is the statement that they release, that likewise it has been said, now indeed we must treat of the divine scriptures, what the universal Catholic Church accepts and what she ought to shun. So it starts off that way. Now, Catholic there means universal, doesn't mean Catholic the way we know it now.
Right.
But this is the books they say are universally divine and the books that they would say they ought to shun. Mm-hmm. The order of the Old Testament begins with Genesis one book, Exodus one book, Leviticus one book, Numbers one book, Deuteronomy one book, Joshua or Naive one book, Judges one book, Ruth one book, Kings four books, Paralipomenon, which is actually the Chronicles, two books, Psalms one book, Solomon three books, Proverbs one book, Ecclesiastes one book, Cantinal of Cantinals one book, likewise Wisdom one book, which is Ecclesiastes, basically, and Sirach will be one book. Likewise, the order of the prophets will be Isaiah one book, Jeremiah one book, Ganoth one, that is Lamentations, Ezekiel one book, Daniel one book, OC one book, Malachi one book, Joel one book, Abadias one book, Jonas one book, Nahum one book, Habakkuk one book, Sophonisus one book, Agius one book, Zechariah one book, Malachias or Malachi one book, and likewise the order of what's could possibly considered different types of literature. So Job, Tobias, Edris or Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, Judas, and the Maccabeans. And then they were into the New Testament and basically kind of give the same thing, Philemon, Hebrews, all the letters. The only thing that's very interesting is very early on, they tried to, and St. Augustine was a part of this, attribute the book of Hebrews to Paul, which now is pretty much, well, not universally, but pretty commonly agreed upon that Hebrews was not written by Paul.
Okay. Is that just because mostly, like, the style that it's written
style in? Of literature, structure, way it's, it's believed it kind of was a more maybe pastor, elder, of the Hebrew church,
sure,
of the time. And so that was the council of AD 382 in Rome. And then we move on to St. Augustine actually oversaw himself three separate councils. So there's a Synod of Hippo, which was in the region of North Africa in 393. There's the count. There's two councils of Carthage in 397 and 419, and all three of those also affirmed this canonization of Scripture. And basically, and it's funny because we actually see some books in there that we actually don't have now.
Right. Yeah.
So that the Catholic, which kind of came out of the Reformation and okay. stuff like that. And so there's some books that the Catholic and the Anglican Bible and then the Greek Orthodox Bible has that we don't.
Sure.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy. And so it's wild to think that, you know, the Bible that we have now came from a group of church leaders getting together and voting and saying, okay, like, yeah. you know, what are the yays? What are the nays?
Right. Yeah.
You know, like it wasn't like God came down and they said, okay, the Lord told us this. It was yays and nays.
Yeah. Yeah, literally.
Yeah, like votes for yes, votes for no. Who could you imagine yeah. now if we said like, oh, we believe this now because this many enough people voted yes versus voted no.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's very interesting when you start to learn the history, just how much like, no, people were involved in this process.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a real human
yeah.
process for the Bible. And I don't think like that should scare us.
Right.
Most of the things we have are kind of set up that way. Mm-hmm. Through people, but it is amazing to think that like that is how Scripture came about, and that's how, you know what I mean? And so like and it that should help you understand a little bit of the differences of the Catholic. So like the Catholic and the Anglican Bible, their Old Testament books, and kind of what is also would be considered they're called Deuterocanonical now. Mm-hmm. So the Deuterocanonical books of the Catholic and Anglican Bible would be Tobit, Judith's. They actually have an addition to Esther
okay.
called Esther 1. They have 1st and 2nd Maccabeans, the Wisdom of Solomon, Sirach, Baruch, and then, or Sirach, Baruch, the Letters of Jeremiah, and then they actually have additions to the Book of Daniel.
Okay.
And then the Greek Orthodox, that's when they get wild. They actually have one Enoch in their Bible.
Okay.
Jubilees 1, 2, and 3. And then the Paropolemia of Baruch. And so they've got a couple extra.
Wow.
Their Bibles are fat.
Yeah.
They got fat Bibles.
Yeah.
So a lot of that is Old Testament. Really right. doesn't have anything to do with, all of it is Old Testament, actually. It has nothing to do with Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, but if you're wondering why you don't know about Hanukkah, it's because our Bibles don't have 1st and 2nd Maccabeans.
Right.
You know, which Hanukkah is based off of.
Yeah. Yeah, so our Bible versus like the Anglican and the Catholic, the New Testament is the same.
It's the same.
Yeah.
Yep, the same. Same New Testament, same ideas. Theirs just has a lot of older, that would have actually, the Hebrews of the time, you know, the Jews and the Hebrews would have saw these books as a part of the wisdom literature. So they would have, you know, saw 1st and 2nd Maccabeans
sure.
as Scripture.
Sure.
The way that we would not see them in Scripture now.
Yeah.
They're great books.
Sure.
Nothing yeah. like contradicting. There's not like, you know, the Messiah will be a woman. You know, there's yeah. nothing in there like that. But, you know, like it's just very more stories, mm-hmm. more history, more wisdom. You know, Tobit is the same. A lot of wisdom in there. And so, but yeah, it's very interesting because I think we think like the Bible we had, like maybe someone was digging in the desert and they were like, I found a canonized Bible. You know, like
yeah.
it's a mystery, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
Like the Bible we have was voted on by men, leaders of, you know, at one time we were a global, fully connected church. Unfortunately, we're not now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was very intentional because it really mattered.
Yeah.
This book really, or these books really matter.
Yep.
They're very important.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know if we know that sometimes.
Yeah.
I think we take for granted that it's on our phone.
Yeah. Right.
You know?
Or that I have like 10 different copies in my house.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, different. So I have yeah. I have Bibles based off the leather type. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
You know, like I collect Bibles, which is hilarious. Mm-hmm. Like this ancient book that's, you know, has been used as the most powerful book in the world. Like I just collect them like for fun, like they're bobbleheads.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. And that's crazy to think about, but that's real.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if we understand the complexity of, you know, and I think too, like, I think a big piece of this is that we also, and this is one of the things we've even been challenged with at Beloved, I don't know how much people know church history.
Right.
And I think this should help this, you know, I think like when you read about the Council of Rome, go read about it. Go read about Carthage and, you know, some of the crazy stuff, Council of Trent, some of these other things that happened, you know, the meeting in Hippo and like, and understand like, I wish we did a better job of understanding our history, you know, not just whether, no matter where you live, like American or Canadian or German history, but our history and not our American Reformed history.
Yeah.
Our whole history.
Yep.
And what all, you know, what all played into that. And so it's vitally important, and it's very interesting seeing how kind of the process they took each book through and said, okay, like, they basically built a filtration system of each book needs to pass through these things, you know, to be considered the gospel or divine.
Right.
It's a better word.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very interesting. And then in more recent history, there have been a few developments that really,
really changed really the game.
Changed the game.
Yeah. So first, the Bible's like the Bible, the full thing that we have now was first in Latin for years upon years, right? And if it was, even when it got translated to English, for a long time it was translated from the Latin text. So you're getting a translation from a translation.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So like, here's a great example of that. When you think about, you know, we say Lucifer the morning star, and we say that his name was Lucifer.
Right.
It's not his name.
Yeah.
Right? So Lucifer in Latin, or morning star in Latin, is Lucifares, which is Lucifer. And so when they translate it from Latin to English, they kept Lucifares and added morning star, and it became Lucifer the morning star.
Right.
But that's not his name.
When the morning star actually refers to Venus.
Yes.
The planet. Which is actually like a very, it's a very profound way of thinking about it.
Yeah, it's the last thing to shine in the light of the sun.
Yes. So when the sun comes up, it's the last thing to hold on to its light. Yeah. And like, there's a really profound meaning in that. Oh
my gosh, that's so deep.
But it's just not his name.
It's not his name. No, it's not his name. Not his name is all. So, but yeah, and then in 1530, something massive happens, right?
Yep.
So in 1530, Charles Tyndale actually translates the first English Bible from the Hebrew and the Greek. So it's our first Bible translation that's not a translation of a translation.
Right.
It's actually a translation.
Yes.
You know, and so when Tyndale writes that, it becomes kind of a huge deal, a really, 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 really big deal. And then that didn't last super long until something worse came about.
To put it lightly. Yeah.
And so, you know, there was a lot of issues. There's the Council of Nicaea and a bunch of stuff happening, and so we don't have a lot of time, but we'll just say that in 1611 or in 1604, the current king of England, named King James himself, which that name may sound familiar, approved a new translation of the Bible by monks, basically. And then in 1611, we get the King James Bible. And so the translation was broken down into five committees. First Westminster, first Cambridge, first Oxford, second Westminster, and second Cambridge. And they broke down and did the translation based off section by section. And then the Bible would come together, and it would hit mass print in 1611. And most individuals didn't have a King James Bible, though. It was mass printed to churches. You know what I mean? Still, the Bible was not very handheld. It was at the church, you know. But thanks to the King James Bible, we have things like unicorns and all kinds of problems.
Yeah.
And so it's you know, that's kind of where we get into some of the interesting things, because Bible history takes so many turns from there. You know, we often talk about, you know, a crazy moment in history is the thought of dispensationalism.
Sure.
You know, so John Nelson Darby in the 1860s comes up with the idea of dispensationalism and the rapture.
Yep.
And by the early 1900s, he ends up at a Christian, not conference. I don't know what they would have called.
Right. Some kind of gathering.
Yeah. It's kind of like a conference back then. Both Dake and the name's leaving me right now.
Yeah,
but,
I know who you're.
Schofield.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Both Dake and Schofield are actually at that conference while they're making their Bibles and actually are the first people to include dispensational rapture theory in their Bibles.
Yeah.
And that's how that kind of got. That how yeah, yeah how it got its footing, off.
Yeah.
Then Left Behind came, and we never looked back. thanks to Dallas Jenkins' father, writer of The Chosen. So you see, there's all these little pinpoints in history of like the King James 1611. You know, it just so happens that you know John Nelson Darby's at this conference, and Dake is there, and Schofield is there, and we have the Latin Bible for so long, and you know, you think of people like Ryan. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who had some interesting beliefs based off the German translation of the Bible, which now actually a couple little things in there that we'd go, no.
Yeah, right.
That's not actually what that says, you know? And it's very interesting because, you know, even you take someone like an N.T. Wright or Tim Mackey talking about, we're still very early in translating, learning culture and times and different things of that period. And so even that's very interesting that we're still very early in understanding text and fragments of understanding cultural narratives and things in those.
Right. Yeah. Here's what's interesting. I'm guessing most people listening have probably at least heard the term Dead Sea Scrolls.
Yes.
People have probably heard that term.
Yes.
But I didn't realize just how recent of a discovery those were.
Yeah.
Like that happened when my parents were alive when that was being.
Yeah. That was like that made it to Fox News.
Yeah. So that was the 40s and 50s, right?
Yes. Yeah. I'm looking up to make sure I have the correct date, but.
So, it was around the 40s and 50s that they started being discovered and.
1947.
Yeah.
1947, the Dead Sea Scrolls come out. And the belief is that a group of almost zealot style, like Hebrew monks basically said like, screw it, Israel's jacked up, we're out. And they took a set of Hebrew text, right? And so like, think about it like this. This is a great scripture to kind of talk about the Hebrew, the makeup of the Hebrew Bible here. I've got it here somewhere. Let's see. Where'd it go? I have it here somewhere. Basically, it's Jesus talking about in Luke. Basically, Jesus giving a breakdown of what would be considered. Here it is. Luke 24:44 says that, then he said to them, this is Jesus, these are words that I spoke to you while I was still with you, that everything written about me in the law of Moses, the prophets, and the Psalms must be fulfilled. So he's talking about Torah, major and minor prophets, and wisdom literature, which was Psalms, right. Ecclesiastes, Solomon. Yeah.
The word he used didn't just mean the book of Psalms.
No.
It meant, that branch of literature.
That as a whole, right? Yeah. And so the Dead Sea Scrolls come out, and they are the Law of Moses, the Psalms, and the prophets.
Yeah.
And they're older than any manuscript by a large date that we have. So like if you, I keep saying we have. A lot of stuff now is done by the Septuagint translation. So Septuagint's is like around 70 AD. You've got the Masoretic text. I'm probably butchering that. I think it's Masoretic. Maybe Masoretic text. That's 600 to 1200 AD. Mm-hmm. The Dead Sea Scrolls are about 250 BC.
Yeah. And when they were found, like this was an unbelievable task for the people who were organizing this because they were found, but they were like bits and pieces.
Yeah,
of, it wasn't
butchered.
Like, it wasn't like whole sheets of paper that they were finding.
No, imagine if someone took like a 6,000 piece puzzle and put it in like a shredder.
Yeah, and then said, "Hey, here's put this puzzle together," but there's no picture to go on.
Yeah, yeah, there's no picture.
And so people dedicated their lives to matching up, like, oh, look at these words, how they're written.
Yeah.
This is identical to what was written in,
here is this
Deuteronomy this or, you know.
And yep. Just, and so they're all connected. And not that we needed it. It was a 100% reaffirming of just how real the Hebrew Bible is.
Yeah.
Just how right and mm-hmm. accurate. Every time they would find something that was readable, it would be like, oh, this says the exact same thing.
Look at that.
Oh, it says the exact same thing. Yeah, it wasn't like we got it and it was like, oh, no. You know, like Jeremiah hated God. You know, like it wasn't nothing like that. It was actually like, oh, this is aligning everything up perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it was just, it's just insane to think about.
Yeah. And it's just, it's crazy when you think about how recently that happened in history.
Yeah, literally. The 40s.
Yeah.
Isn't that insane?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just so funny. I just don't know how much I wish as believers we would give more time to going, you know, I read this book every day, or at least I hope you read it every day.
Yeah.
You know, I read this book every day. I wonder how it came together.
Where did it come from?
Yeah, I wonder how all this became what it is, you know? And I don't know if we really give enough time to think about how did we get to 66?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that should be important for people's. How did we get to the 66 that we've got?
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
So, as I mentioned at the beginning, I'm going to post a few links because they're in, like, we didn't get that.
No,
get that
I mean,
deep into like the Old Testament.
We're trying to keep the podcast a little shorter. Yeah. And so we're trying to, you know, synthesize this stuff.
Yeah.
But this is a lot. I taught a 2-day class on it when we had Foundations.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's so much there.
Yeah.
There's so much there. But no, this is good. I think this is important to talk about and support.
Yeah,
to
it matters. It should matter to us. And hopefully these conversations are not the beginning and the ending, but they are a launching pad for you, the listener, as a launching pad to go, I need to learn about this.
Yeah.
I need to care about this more. And that's what I think should be, you know, how this should work is that this should be your launching pad to say, okay, I want to know.
Yeah.
You know.
It's good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for your time.
It's like riding a bike, man. It's like we never missed a beat.
We never missed. All right. Well, guys, that's going to be it for this episode. And to all our listeners, thank you for listening. And we love you all. And we'll see you next time.